Well, hey, everybody, thanks again for tuning in to another episode of Conversations with Kenny, episode number 43. Quick intro before the show begins today with a couple notes. Just want to say this was a really fun episode. I really enjoyed it, and I think you will too. I had my friend Nick in the studio earlier, and we had the honor and the pleasure of speaking with Mark Vorderbruggen. And Mark is a medicine man. He studied medical chemistry. He has a PhD in physical organic chemistry. And the whole conversation was a great learning experience. There were so many things we didn't know. We talked about ancestral health tips. We talked about foraging. And he even gave us a few recipes that we could try using plants in our backyards. So enjoy the show. And be sure to check out his website. It's mmplantco.com. See what he has going on over there. I really think you're going to enjoy it. That's mmplantco.com. And enjoy the show. Mark, so you are a medicine man, is that correct?
Correct.
Excellent. For the people out there listening today, and us as well, could you maybe tell us a little bit about yourself and what a medicine man is?
Sure.
And we'll kind of go from there. We'll start off there.
Okay. So from education side, I actually got a master's in medicinal chemistry, a PhD in physical organic chemistry. My plan was to go into the pharmaceutical industry. But as I delved more and more into natural products and plants and all that sort of thing, I realized there's amazing powers in them. Why bother with the pharmaceutical stuff? Especially when you think about it, for 83,000 generations, the plants and mushrooms were the human medicine. And if you think about survival of the fittest, those that, evolution, those that responded best to these plants and mushrooms were most likely the ones passing their genes on. So there's really a co-evolutionary blend between us and these medicinal plants and mushrooms. And so my goal then was just to reattach people to the medicines of our ancestors, the medicines that our bodies are designed for. And through that, I became the medicine man.
That's freaking awesome, man. So like, where does it all start for you? Does it go back to...
Were you a kid out in the woods?
Oh, yes.
Around?
Yeah. So both my parents were children of the Great Depression. And one of the ways they got through that terrible time was their knowledge of wild edible plants and the medicinal properties of plants. My older brother is 10 months older than me. My younger brother is 13 months younger than me. So we were basically Irish triplets, which was very difficult on my mom until she realized if she takes us out in the woods every day for at least an hour, we wear ourselves out and we're much easier to deal with. So while we were out there, she was telling us about the different foods and medicines that the woods gave us. And so that's something I grew up with. I was actually surprised when I started up all this that people didn't know this sort of thing. I just assumed everyone had a similar childhood where they were, being taught the foods and medicines of the wild, and quickly discovered no. And then I said, wait a minute, there's an opportunity here. And ta-da.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that, people and have gotten away from natural ancestral medicine? You know,
what point in history did we go from living off the land, trusting the land to like a modern medicine?
I can answer that very precisely. 1869. In 1869, a synthetic molecule called chloral hydrate was first used medicinally. It was a sedative, an anesthetic. And so scientists, they came up, hey, we got a molecule here that affects humans, and it does stuff to the humans that we haven't been able to do with these plants and mushrooms. This was at the beginning of the Age of Enlightenment, the age, where everyone was going, wow, science, yay. And so with nature, with plants, they're very powerful, but there's some work involved into it. Whereas with these chemical synthesis, it's fairly straightforward. You can automate it. We got the big chemical plants that are cranking out these chemicals, put them in the capsules. Humans don't even have to touch it. And so really what it became is the synthetic medicine is the mass-produced medicine for the masses. Trying to supply, when you got, well now, 6 or 7 billion people on the planet, they're trying to take care of them all using the plants and mushrooms would be very difficult. Whereas having a couple of plants around, you know, the chemical plants, factories making these medicines, is just more cost effective.
That makes sense, I suppose, you know.
I think that's a good point where the natural medicines work well, but there's also some work, there's some spiritual discipline involved. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, where my house looks like a witch's workshop because I get all these plants hanging all over the place drying, because that's one of the steps you got to do. So
do you have any recommend any kits for like anyone doing foraging for like when you after you brought a bunch of stuff home and the processing, do you have any
the main things are string, a very loving and forgiving spouse and a blender or food processor. Oh, and lots and lots of glass jars, if possible the amber, the dark ones, because the sunlight and even the light from fluorescent lights and the all the LED lights we have now, they have frequencies that are damaging to plant material. So you want to either keep all your stuff in a cupboard away from light until you actually need it, or in some sort of amber jar to protect it.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So for somebody out there that is interested possibly in getting into foraging, how do they know what to look for? How do you know what's safe, what's not safe, with losing the ancestral knowledge, I guess, kind of over time? How do you kind of get back in touch with that?
Okay, that's a great question. Now, first, let me say there are all sorts of books out there on foraging. In fact, not a promo. I don't get any royalties or anything if you buy Idiot's Guide Foraging, but
it's a, no, absolutely, man. I'm all for you promoting
but, whatever you want. But yeah, so, 100%. You know, and Idiot's Guide, I have multiple pictures. But here's the thing. You don't go and buy a book and head out into the woods looking for wild edible plants. Like in Idiot's Guide, there's only 70 plants. That's a small number of the edible plants that are out there. But most of them don't have that many plants in it. What you need to do, if you want to learn foraging, especially nowadays, it's very, very, very easy. You go out, you stand on your front porch or your back porch and look and see what plants are around you. And identify them first, starting with the trees. Trees are very easy to identify, especially nowadays, because there are a number of apps that allow you just to take a picture of the leaf and it tells you what that tree is.
Oh yeah.
Those apps work really good for trees. For other plants, they're a little iffy yet, but you identify the trees. Then you go to Google, or I'm a DuckDuckGo fan myself, type in elm tree edible medicinal and see what comes up. Usually it'll get my website, The Foraging Texas. There's also some edible and medicinal uses for 225 plants found all across North America. But you know, identify the plants around you. Start on your doorstep, identify the trees, identify the landscaping plants, then start working on the weeds with the landscaping plants. Take pictures of them, go to your local nursery and say, what is this? And they go, oh, that's an Eleagnus. You go home, Eleagnus, edible and medicinal. Oh, wow, there's great food here.
Right.
So identify the plants around you rather than go out seeking the plants in some book. And once you do that, one of the things that gives you is it gives you all sorts of dopamine hits. So every time you've properly identified a plant and see its edible uses, your brain goes, whoa, this is awesome. Dopamine. And so you get that dopamine reward you need to keep going, especially when you're down at the weed level, because at the weed level, it becomes a little more difficult. Surprisingly enough, Monsanto, the maker of Roundup, used to have a really good app for identifying weeds, because then they tell you which poisons to use to kill them. It isn't there anymore. But I really loved using that app with people to show them how to use it to identify the weeds in their yard, so then they could eat them or make medicine out of them, rather than spray poison down. The sense of irony was wonderful for me.
Oh, go ahead, Ken.
The app I have on my phone that I used, it's called iNaturalist.
That's a very good one.
Yeah, and it shows you kind of like what's in the area, just like what you're saying.
Yep.
But it doesn't do very good for identifying mushrooms or telling you if they're edible or not. For whatever reason, I don't think they want the liability of that. You know, but you were talking about weeds, and I know around here it's the big thing, especially in the summer, is dandelion wine and the uses with dandelions. And it's amazing how many people will just spend, you know, hundreds of dollars to kill them in their yard versus, you know, picking them and you turning them into, you know, health sustaining, you know, yeah. products.
They're super nutritious and super medicinal. Pop quiz for you.
Okay.
How deep down does a dandelion root grow?
Oh man, Nick, you want to take this one?
I think it has like a tap root. So maybe like eight or 10 inches maybe, or.
Not even close. Try 12 feet.
Really?
Yeah. So the dandelion root. Well, that's so
difficult to get rid of probably.
Yep. And they are what are called nurse plants. When soil is damaged, when it's relatively bare, when there's not a lot to hold everything in the soil, every time it rains, that water dissolves the water-soluble minerals and leaches them deeper and deeper into the soil, thereby rendering the soil basically no good for most life things. That's why you got to keep putting fertilizer on your grass, because all the minerals are leached down because your grass roots are only this far and everything below that is no longer useful. But what dandelions do is they come into this damaged soil, they send these taproots down 12 feet and suck all those minerals back up into the leaves, making them super nutritious, using those the minerals to make all sorts of vitamins too that are super nutritious, giving the flowers medicinal properties. But they bring all this back up there. And then when they die, they deposit those minerals back in the soil at the top layer of the soil. Oh. And then they have a 12-foot strand of organic matter mixed in there, which decomposes into humic acid, which is then traps water, blah, 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 science, science, science. So they're absolutely fantastic for your yard. I think like every third year, you should just have a yard completely covered in dandelions.
I think a lot more people knew that, they wouldn't be eliminating dandelions from their yards, because obviously the other plants rely on the dandelions. Mm-hmm. They bring the minerals back up to the soil or the top.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, you mentioned dandelion wine. If you talk to wine, I don't want to use the term wine snobs, wine aficionados, they can say where a wine from France is based on the flavor. You've heard that, the terroir of that. If you go to France, you'll see underneath all the grape vineyards, it's loaded with dandelions. Scientists, chemists, being the type of people we are, we've analyzed what are they actually tasting. What they're tasting are the minerals in the soil that the grapes have taken up due to the dandelions taking the minerals up. So really that flavor, that unique flavors to the French wines is due to the dandelions.
So dandelions would be just fine for a garden then also.
Oh yeah.
Any gardens.
Yeah, they started out as a food crop. A number of weeds in North America started out as food crops over in Europe or Africa or China, Japan, India, all those places.
I think my great-grandmother, dude, like, I think she used to, like, fry up dandelion stems and, like, you know, there's just so many uses for them.
Oh, yeah.
I freaking love it. Yep. I love the way the life force energy has, like, this cycle about it and sustaining. It's freaking awesome.
Everything is connected.
So all the products you have on your website, is that stuff you foraged and put together?
Okay, because of FDA. So what we're talking about here now is Medicine Man products such as the liver pill. And I have 8 different products for different physical issues with the body. Because of the FDA regulations, everything has to be traceable to a particular grower. So I get the herbs and the mushrooms from growers. Because I have trust issues, and there was a big issue with like basically sawdust pills in the herbal supplement world, you know, like 5 years ago. First thing, when we get the stuff in from the farmers, from the growers, I do genetic testing to make sure it is what it's supposed to be. And then the heavy metals, pesticides, herbicides, all that sort of stuff. So once I'm convinced that it is what I wanted and what they said it was, then we start blending it together. I test it again because I still have trust issues. I can't make this myself. I don't have enough resources to make it myself. But there's a number of pharmaceutical companies that have toll manufacturing on the side where you give them a recipe and they'll put it in a capsule for you. And so I use one here in Houston, Texas to make our stuff.
Okay, good.
And then from there, they blend it. I've worked with toll manufacturers for a long time. Accidents happen. So I test it again, make sure do all the same testing and make sure nothing wrong got in there. Then it gets encapsulated, put in the bottles, and I take 3 bottles and test those again before we release it. Earlier this year, we were having a problem with the blood pressure pill because they couldn't get it mixed well enough. And so I ended up having to dispose over 5,000 bottles of it because it just wasn't up to spec.
That's a shame.
But it's what you do when you're trying to do the best on the market. That's what happens.
For sure. For sure.
So I'm not in it for money. I'm in it for stressed, you know, sleepless nights and helping people.
Heck yeah, well, man.
That's kind of why yeah. we do what we do. Just the biggest thing right now nowadays is helping people.
Most definitely. And they need a lot of help right now.
For sure, man. For sure. Yeah. And we were exploring your website a little bit earlier, and I came across the ancestral health tips that you had up there, and I found those super fascinating and kind of wanted to run through those with you a little bit, and give you an opportunity to kind of talk about the different ancestral health tips.
Sure.
So, I think the big one that caught my eye was sleeping, getting proper sleep and how we can do that, in relation to foraging, natural.
Yeah. Well, so let's go back a step. So back, I mentioned earlier, humans have been around for 83,000 generations. If you look at hominoids that could make fire, chip out stone tools and wore clothing, things like that, it can go almost 2.5 million years ago. So there's a lot of different things that led to us. But one of the things that led to us was all that evolutionary pressure of the world, thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. The bodies we have now are designed for that world way, way, way back then, not this modern world that we've created and made more convenient in a lot of ways. But by making it more convenient, we've taken off a lot of the stresses that made us who we are. And we're actually kind of important to our health. So sleep for one of those things. And we had fire, but it was not something that was used just to light the cave all night long. We didn't really get into artificial light until Edison. But there's a theory, sleep. One of the reasons creatures go to sleep at night, well, there's all sorts of brain cleaning that has to go on, body cleansing. But it also immobilizes us so that predators can't find us by just being there, not moving. Right. A lot of predators, they can't see in the dark, they can smell things and so forth, but it's a survival tip. But the main thing is all that cleansing that goes in the body at the time. Like I said, filing away things in the brain, your liver gets very active, all this stuff is going on. And so if you don't have good sleep, you don't get the REM, the deep sleep that you need, your body can't take care of itself. It's a fundamental importance to get good sleep. And nowadays we suck at that because there's too many interesting things going on, or I don't know if you can see, but these are actually blue blocking glasses just to help reduce
phone usage and laptops before bed.
Except I just have them everywhere. I have a computer because it's just easier that way.
Right.
But we have a natural, a natural rhythm of sleep, the circadian rhythm. We're supposed to sleep basically, about 2 hours after the sun goes down. We're done doing our thing. And then we get up in the morning when the birds start singing and the sun is starting to come up again. And when we're not doing that, our body gets all confused. It causes all sorts of extra stress. It causes stress on our hearts. It causes creation of more free radicals in the body. It causes plaque buildup in the brain, because we're not cleansing ourselves the way we're supposed to when we're just sleeping there, doing nothing but sleeping. And, the internal work, if you will, the preventative maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the blue blocking glasses, they help block that ultraviolet, or sorry, the blue frequency wavelengths that have been shown to screw up our circadian rhythm. I mean, that's just one thing. But then just getting out and moving around. I'm a big proponent of walking around outside. If you've read through the ancestral stuff, walking around outside is one of my biggest things. There's all sorts of health benefits from that. But going back to the sleep, one of the things you can do to help you get to bed at the same time every night is get up at the same time every night. It's a little easier for humans to set an alarm clock to get us up in the morning than to set an alarm that says, okay, go to bed now, because we ignore the go to bed now. But the alarm clock in the morning, most people hit snooze once or twice, or I don't. Right. It drives my wife nuts. It's like, oh, morning. I grew up on a dairy farm, by the way, too. So it's like mornings is my thing.
Right. You're up 3 hours before the sun is,
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
But when you're up early, you go to bed early, too.
And absolutely.
Like I said, early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Very true.
Ticks the Weiss off, but you know.
There's definitely a lot of different things you could do to get a good night's rest too, mm-hmm. like turning off your Wi-Fi router, you know,
where yep.
Like last, oh, like you said.
And don't have any of the electronic charging things going on in your bedroom, because each one of them has a little red light or a little blue light or a little green light. Mm-hmm. You know, you want absolute darkness in there. Even the sleeping masks work really well, and the little earplugs if you can handle them. You want to have no distractions, no lights, and on a regular schedule. Even on the weekends and holidays and so forth, still get up and go to bed at the same time. And in this culture, it's very hard, because I know a lot of people say their friends will go, hey, come on, it's only 10:30, let's go out. And it's like,
yeah, right, dude. Like, come 8 o'clock, I'm like ready for bed, dude, at 8 o'clock. And I have no problem personally sleeping. I mean, when I'm out, I am freaking out. Yep. You know, I'll occasionally drink like those herbal teas, the sleepy yep. time teas. I'm yep, not really yep. sure what they put in those, but
oh, chamomile, you know, yeah, they
make a difference, you know.
They do. Yep.
For sure. One of the ones that really caught my eye on the ancestral health tip is throwing things at stuff. What's going on with that, man?
Okay.
That...
Oh, I love this one. So if you look at the human physiological structure, we are really the only creatures on Earth that are designed to accurately throw things with a great deal of force. Like monkeys can throw their poo, you know, things like that. But we can throw things accurately and strong enough to kill an animal. And so our brain evolved for the targeting, the calculating the parabolic arc. There's a lot of, you know, if you play darts or something like that, there's a lot of stuff going on in your brain that you don't even realize controlling your body. But they've shown, there's a great book called The Throwing Madonna. And I read that before my kids were born. And that led me to pretty much every day when they were little kids, the game of throwing stuff at things. And I'd set up some, you know, 2-liter bottles, empty bottles at the end of the hallway, give them some bean bags. And every time they managed to hit a bottle over, they'd get like a Tootsie Roll or a piece of candy or a nickel as they got older, and got them really good at throwing things at stuff, because it's been shown to really strengthen the brain. Like I said, your brain is doing all these sort of calculations. Normally when people think about brain exercises, they think of Sudoku or whatever the number game is,
right,
or music or language or things like that. But there's a lot of evidence that shows throwing things at stuff does that same sort of mental workout. And in some ways it's even better, because you're getting your whole body involved. So it's like calibrating your system. You're getting everything working together. Like with Sudoku, you're just filling in numbers in a box. Yeah. It stretches also, your brain, but now start throwing things at stuff.
Yeah. That hunter survival instinct of the having mm-hmm. to defend yourself, and
yeah.
I could see that.
And then you have them switch hands. Okay, if you hit it with your, you know, both my, well, one kid is left-handed, one is right-handed. You have them throw with the other hand, and then suddenly they're getting all sorts of more brain workouts and so forth. Okay. I truly believe that one of the things that led to the success of my kids was working with them throwing things at stuff when they were young. My wife says, nah, it's genetics and stuff like that. It's like, nah, it's me teaching them to throw things really hard, really accurately.
So were you in the backyard, like teaching them how to like throw daggers and axes and, you know, stuff like that? That's too funny. I know around here, the big thing that's really taken off is it's an axe throw. There's a yep. couple of places around here. I think yeah. there's one down at the mall. Yeah. It's like an yeah. axe throwing area, you know.
Well, people are getting back more into that survival mm-hmm. instinct, and it's even though it's kind of trendy, it's kind of a good thing to reawaken.
Yeah,
that
yeah, and bringing back the caveman actions, because that's what we evolved doing. That's how we got our food, was throwing things at stuff. Mm-hmm. It's great exercise for the mind and body.
So, do you think more people are returning to, you know, ancestral practices at like a higher rate? And if so, like why do you think that is? Do you think people are just sick and tired of, you know, I'll let you kind of.
Okay. So I have my own theory. Yes, they are in droves are heading back, and not just the herbal medicines, but all the outdoor sports and, you know, hiking and camping and bushcraft and all this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I have a theory. It's going to take a little while to explain this.
That's all so right. That's we'll all go right, with this. We got time.
All right. There's been a really fascinating occurrence that happens when people are lost at sea. So you have people in a lifeboat, you know, coast, you know, floating, you know, their ship has sunk. They've been in the lifeboat for weeks. They have a fishing kit. So they're catching fish. They're pulling the fish up and they're eating the meat of the fish. And after about 6 weeks, a switch gets flipped in their brain. And suddenly now when they're eating that fish, where they had just been eating the meat, kind of like sushi, they're suddenly looking at the eyeballs and looking at the guts, the liver and the skin and going, wow, that looks super delicious. I want to eat that too. Where before they were disgusted by the thought of eating the eyeballs and the all that. So the body said, the eyeballs and the liver and the, you know, all that, the skin of the fish is loaded with nutritional value. And there's something in the brain that recognizes there's something in this food, in this fish, that I need if I want to keep surviving. And so what was disgusting at first suddenly clicks over and says, you want to eat that. And they eat it and it's absolutely delicious and they're loving it. Now, fast forward to modern people out here walking around, not trapped in a life raft, but they're walking through woods like this and their brain is sensing stuff at a level below our, you know, conscious thought, but it is smelling things. It is seeing colors. It is going, I need that. Why aren't you giving me that? You know how much better my life would be if you gave that to me? And we get this feeling like there's something out here I need. And, but there's, because they didn't have the growing up being taught all the foods and medicine around them, they're very cautious, which they should be. And so it's led to this demand for instructors of wild edible plants and mushrooms and medicine men and so forth to help reconnect them to this nature. These are the things you can eat. These are the things you want to avoid. These will help you with this. This will help you with that. And they're suddenly feeling satisfied. They got that nature. Their brain is going, yes, finally, I've been trying to get this for years. And I think now as they see the chaos and corruption and, you know, problems in a lot of modern life. I mean, let's face it, computers are great, cell phones are great, but at the same time, there's something to be said about just being in nature and nibbling on some stuff that is good to eat. And I think more and more our brains are going, you know what? You need to get out there more. You need to get out there more. Please, please get me out there and eat that and that and that. Don't eat that, but eat that and that and that. And it's just our subconscious caveman brains screaming, saying, please, you know, nourish me.
Well, that's definitely perfect timing for the return of the medicine man, because people, most people live a city lifestyle. Mm-hmm. They don't have an opportunity to get out in the nature. And if they do, it's in a park and, mm-hmm. you know, they don't know what to look for plant wise and, or where to begin. Yeah. So yeah. I can see you're being very, you're very significant, your skills and everything.
Yeah. I'm booked up through June with classes.
I was just going to ask, do you offer classes and
every weekend, pretty much all over Texas, so you go on Georgia, Minnesota. So most of the classes are 4-hour walkabouts. I find most people after about 4 hours, their brain is full and their feet are tired and they're just, okay, stop, please. We're done. But yeah, it's out there. I work with Texas Parks and Wildlife, a bunch of museums, a bunch of parks, historical sites, all these sort of places, and reattach people to nature.
If you ever come to PA, man, you'll have to hit me up, because I love walkabouts, dude. Cool. And going back to kind of what you said about like the brain kind of saying, you know, I need this, ties in with the last ancestral health tip that was on your list, grounding. And yes, that's a big one for me, is I'll get this feeling like I need to walk barefoot outside, you know, I just need mm-hmm. to do it. And when I do, I feel so much better, you know, and I'm big on the grounding, man. I'm really big on staying grounded.
Yep. We are electrical beings, and that's how we interacted with, again, the world for a long, long time. Yeah. Occasionally we'd wrap leather around our feet from a deer hide, buffalo hide, things like that, if it was cold. But a lot of times we were running out barefoot, and that is one of our sensory organs telling us what's underfoot, what's around, you know, what we need to be worried about, what we don't need to be worried about, all that sort of thing. So, you know, our skin is picking up the wind, our feet is picking up the soil and telling us, you know, One of the things, there's a really neat book called The Natural Navigator, and it tells you how to observe nature to figure out as you're out hiking what's coming up next. Because by knowing what's around you and looking ahead, seeing the plants, feeling the soil, that sort of thing, you get an idea, is it going to be wet? Is it going to be dry? Is it going to be murky? You know, and it's, depending on the types of soil, it's all very complicated, but you can do it. You know, the soil dictates the plants that are growing. And so the plants tell you what food and what medicine might be available, but it also tells you what animals may be available. So by starting with the soil and understanding the soil, you can really do a good job predicting the entire food chain and what resources are going to be in the area for
Interesting.
You.
Interesting.
So this was just a common skill for the, you know, Native Americans and the Amazon tribes and, you know, early humans, all that sort of thing, because they relied on nature for the resources. So the better they understood that, the better access they could do, the better predicting, the better planning. We are really, really smart creatures. That's what allowed us to spread all over the world, because we are really good at predicting what's going to happen next. And one of the ways is doing that is what's going on around me, what resources are likely to be here. And from that, a lot of it is based just on the soil.
I agree with that. I feel like a lot of times the narrative is they want you to think that you're just this, you know, that you're not as smart or as intuitive as you're capable of. They just want you to believe that you're just this speck of crap on
a
through space, you know?
Yep. A worthless lump. No. We are amazing. Yeah. We're amazing. People are amazing.
Absolutely.
Wolves are pretty cool too.
100%, man.
Yeah.
100%. Speaking of, like, I heard you mention like colder weather things. We wanted to ask you about, you know, foraging in the winter, if there's anything worth, you know, foraging for
Couple
months.
And even where there's snow, one of the big things, and humans have a long history of eating the inner layer of pine trees. So the cambium layer, the living layer of pine trees, it has between 500 and 600 calories per pound.
Really?
So what they would do, so if you go like to Finland, they still do it. They do what's called window painting the pine tree. So you have a big pine tree, you know, it's like foot and a half, 2 feet in diameter. They'll cut a rectangle out of it. They'll, as high as they can reach, go about six to eight inches across, down and across, and peel this like a giant slab of bacon off the tree. From there, you have the outer bark and you have the cambium layer. The outer bark peels away. Kind of difficult, but I need like a tail or something. The cambium layer peels off the dead wood of the tree real easily, but you still have the bark on there, so you have to cut that off. But once you have the cambium layer, we'll turn it sideways now, it peels like string cheese. And so the goal is to peel it into about the thickness of a potato chip and then roast it, bake it or roast it. Yeah. What that does is it helps break down the calories and the protein in it to make it more digestible.
You know, I take a pine tree pollen supplement.
That's good stuff.
Pretty effective, but
yeah, it contains the precursor for testosterone in it.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
Whoa. That's fascinating. I did not know that.
But yeah, you peel into potato chips, you roast it up. You want to drink a lot of water with it because it does absorb a lot of water, but you get 500 to 600 calories per pound, which sounds like a lot to eat. But in a survival situation, which we were for, you know, 83,000 generations or so, maybe 800. You know, anyway, lots and lots of it. It was a food source. Adirondack Mountains up in New York there, if you're familiar with that.
Yep.
The name Adirondack translated means the bark eaters. That's what the native, that was one of their staple foods was the white pines up there, especially during the winter.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I didn't. Yeah.
And so
you think you learned that from a local school or high school or something?
No, that was the Native American tribe in that area. But a lot of trees have edible inner bark, the beech, the maple, the elm. You've probably heard slippery elm it's actually loaded with calories too. It has a nice sweet flavor.
The same concept, right? Just underneath the bark.
Yep. The cambium layer, that living layer.
That's super fascinating. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then also going back to the pine trees, the pine needles. The green pine needles have as much vitamin C in them as lemons and limes and oranges. Pound for pound.
Really?
Yeah. Now, the trick is you got to make a tea. So you got to chop up and crush the pine needles. You need to rupture that cell wall because the vitamin C is inside the cells. If you just take the pine needles and put them in hot water, that pine needle or the vitamin C is trapped. So you got to rupture open the cells, chop it up, crush it up. Also, you do not want to boil. No boiling, because vitamin C, it starts to break down above temperatures of 184 degrees Fahrenheit. Above that temperature, you lose about 10% of the vitamin C per minute. Now at boiling, you're losing 20% per minute. So you quickly, if you boil it, you quickly reduce the, or lose the vitamin C. So you want to bring the water to boiling, take it off, let it cool 3 to 5 minutes. That'll drop it down, especially in the winter, down, you know, like 170. You drop your pine needles in there. You let them soak 15 to 30 minutes, strain them out and drink it. And you got the vitamin C. You need about 250 grams of pine needles to get you a day's worth of vitamins.
Wow, that's very helpful, because I know so many people who around here that make pine needle tea, and they do the opposite of what you just suggested. Okay, they boil it, they don't properly break the cell wall, and so
it can be hard when information is misconstrued too. Do you add any sugar with that, or is that like
no, it actually has a really nice flavor when you do it. Sometimes I'll throw other roots and things in there that I might find, but I just like it straight.
And I don't want to burden you with too many plant questions, but
hey, the cat, that's what I'm here for.
I find cattails fascinating.
Yes.
I haven't tried it, but the cattail is the equivalent of like a potato. I shouldn't say that, but it has starch in it.
Yeah. So cattails, they are connected under the muck by what's called a rhizome. So you'll have a stand of cattails over here and a stand of cattails over here, and they'll have this thick root that connects them and it shoots out the runners. This thick root is where the plant stores starch. It takes sunlight and carbon dioxide during the summer, makes sugars, links the sugars together, stores them down in that rhizome. So then in the spring, it uses that starch to then fuel the growth of new cattail growth. But what you can do is you can take that rhizome, and I love this. It's really one of my favorites. So you get the rhizome, you have this thick root, you throw it on a fire. You throw it on a grill, you throw it on a fire, you just kind of char the outside, the outer skin. You don't peel or anything, you leave it on there, and you just blacken that skin, flip it over, blacken the skin on the other side, and then you take it off and you basically peel that skin off. And what you have now is like a wad of white cotton, long strands of this white cottony material, very fibrous. You pop that in your mouth and you suck on it. It tastes like graham crackers. Just like graham crackers. And you suck the starch and the sugars off it, and then you spit the fibers out when you're no longer getting any flavor, and then you keep doing it.
Okay, I'm glad I asked you that, because I'd be chewing it and swallowing it. I would have.
Nope.
So you're saying I could just go out behind my house, because there's a bunch of those cattails behind my house, pick a couple of those, throw them on the grill like I'm growing up some corn dogs, and just.
Yeah. So, no, the under.
It's the horizontal.
The horizontal root underneath.
Oh,
down that's connecting them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Now, when you got the shoot first coming up in the spring, when it's still, you know, like this tall and it looks kind of like asparagus, treat it like asparagus. It's very delicious. You take that out, you steam it, you roast it, you put some olive oil, some sea salt, you George Foreman grill it for a bit. Very, very, very tasty.
Holy shnikes.
If you let it grow, it puts this thing, it looks like a very narrow ear of corn. Cattails are very primitive plants. They have separate male flowers and female flowers. But they're both on, that's what turns into that brown fluff.
Okay.
That's actually just the female flowers, because the females are what produce the seeds. Anyway, what it looks like is a very thin, narrow ear of corn at the top of the cattail. It actually has a husk around it like an ear of corn. If you peel that off, it looks like a little ear of corn. You steam that, you eat it, it's delicious.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
If you don't, if you just let it form the pollen, they produce lots of pollen. You can collect the pollen. I found that, like a 1 gallon water jug, cut a hole in it. You bend the flowers of the cattails over and just shake them in this jug. And within an hour, you will have a huge amount of pollen, which is a direct replacement for flour.
Really?
But it is gluten free. Yeah. So you can't make the raised breads out of it unless you mix it with gluten flour. but you can use it as a thickening agent. You can make the flatbreads, you know, that sort of thing with it.
That's a, that gluten free, that that's a, something we could talk that's about real quick thing. If you want to. Yeah. My girlfriend's actually gluten free and has introduced me to a bunch of recipes that are gluten free. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, man, by cutting wheat out of my diet, even just a little bit, I've noticed such an increase in like brain focusing, mm-hmm. you know, not feeling drugged down. And I think that'll be super awesome. Yeah. Maybe to try.
If you think about it, that cavemen, they didn't do wheat. They didn't do grain. They did occasionally grass seeds, but it was a small diet or a small part of a much more diverse diet. We really didn't get into growing wheat until we figured out wheat can be used to make beer. And it's like, ooh, if we let these seeds ferment for a while, we get drunk. We like this. let's try and figure out how to grow these seeds and how to breed the plants to produce more seeds. And so that led to a thing. So it's not wheat, gluten wheat is not part of our evolutionary diet. It's not what we're eating other than just small amounts of it for thousands of generations. It's a very recent addition to our diet, kind of like candy bars, you know, and other processed foods in a way.
Junk. That's all junk, you know.
Yep.
So going back to your products a little bit,
sure.
Do you dabble with any of the CBD on the CBD side of things
at all? No, because a lot of the banks that we deal with will not fund or work with you if anything like that.
Really?
CBD is some pretty amazing stuff. We actually have cannabinoid receptors in our body. We evolved using it. Some of the oldest medicines known is the marijuana. They found pottery from like 40,000 years ago, maybe not quite that long, but a long, long, long time ago that had traces of that. That and opium were basically our two oldest medicines. That we can actually say, you know, the thousands and thousands and, you know, tens of thousands of years ago, they are already using that.
I think it's interesting how, you know, for a long time it was shunned and looked down upon as far as like a medicinal purposes go. And
well, it's very effective. So
I think
we all know.
Yeah. But it also is addictive, and especially they've shown in use. If your brain isn't fully formed, mm-hmm. it can kind of lock it at that immature stage,
right?
So, like everything, people use it, you know, improperly,
right? For sure. But yeah, going to your products, I wanted to kind of give you an opportunity to talk about those more in detail a little bit.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, just kind of, you know, wherever you want to take it from there, I guess.
Okay. Well, let me just talk a few that might be useful in the coming holiday season. Well, okay. I guess we're already through Christmas, but especially the liver pill. And what this is, it's a mixture of three things. Just to go sideways for a second, in all my formulations, I completely reject modern synthetic preservatives or processing aids. Everything is like what you would have gotten 40,000 years ago. So there's no preservatives like BHT, butyl hydroxy toluene, or magnesium stearate.
All the ones that you have a hard time even pronouncing.
Yeah. So if it does need an antioxidant or preservative, what I found is an extract from rosemary that protects the stuff. And then if I do need some sort of manufacturing aid, processing aid, it's going to be rice bran. So we got that stuff going on. But okay, so back to the liver pill. It is a mixture of burdock root, which has been shown to speed up the processing of your liver. So it produces more liver enzymes and just generally speeds up the detoxifying powers of the liver. It also has milk thistle seed extract, like a milk thistle seed tea that has been freeze dried. If you eat a bad mushroom, like the death cap or the destroying angel mushroom, it goes down and it attacks your liver and it starts destroying your liver cells. The one medicine that modern science has for that is actually the extract from the milk thistle seed, because what the extract does is it helps protect and maintain the integrity of the liver cells while they're under attack. And they basically try and hold your liver together until it can process and get rid of the poisons. If it doesn't, then you need a liver transplant. Gee. But before they do the liver transplant, they're going to try and use the milk thistle extract to hold that liver together. So both of those are in there.
Now, but is then, that something that you take on like a daily basis?
Yeah. So I take, you know, four a day. I'm a big guy, but four a day. But there's a special other ingredient in there because you can buy burdock root capsules. You can buy milk thistle capsules out there, but it also contains flaxseed.
Okay.
And I mean, flaxseed is very important. You know, it has all sorts of good uses, but the reason I have the flaxseed in there is to increase the bioavailability of the milk thistle seed extract. So with that, it works a whole lot better if you have some phospholipids in there, the sort of fats that are in the flaxseed. You might have certain foods like vitamin D2, you know, the vitamin D fortified milk. You put it in milk because the D vitamins need fat with them to be absorbed. Otherwise, they don't do anything. So it's the same with the liver pill. That flaxseed in there is the special secret ingredient that makes everything else work that much better. My personal favorite. Oh,
I was just going to say, I think that's what I'll be making a purchase of today is that the liver pills. I think that's an important one.
Very much so.
Body detox. So
yeah. And so we have the Medicine Man Plant Co. website. And then also on Amazon, they're available on Amazon. If you want to see the reviews, go to the Amazon reviews. There's hundreds and hundreds of really good reviews on the products. My personal favorite is the brain pill because I live and die by my brain. And even before I started Medicine Man, I was already doing these sort of things to help maintain my brain. But this has the lion's mane mushroom, which has been shown the lion's mane mushroom actually increases the number of neural connections between your cells. So it wires more of your brain cells together. So that makes recall quicker, memorizing things faster, problem solving quicker, creativity better, all these sort of things. It's really, you're like making all these extra connections in your brain. Good thing.
So is that, I heard that's that lion's mane and probably your product there, that'd be good to take just before you start to use like work on a project or something, or is that good?
Yep, yep.
First thing in the morning before bed?
Yeah, first thing in the morning. So along with the lion's mane, and let me just say for a second here, you don't want to take this before going to bed because one thing we've heard a number of people reported very vivid dreams if they take it before going to bed. And then if you have good dreams normally, great. You know, that's fine. But if you're prone to nightmares or something like that, you probably don't want to take it at night.
That's fair. Now,
sorry,
I didn't mean to interrupt you. Oh. But you talked about dreams and that made me think of mugwort, which is supposed to be a dream enhancer, I suppose, you know.
Yep. And lucid dreaming.
And lucid dreaming. Yeah. I've personally like burned it like a sage, like what you burn, like white sage.
Yep.
And you get the effects the same. So is it similar? Is that like, is mugwort part of that?
No,
combination,
or not in this one. The other two things in here, there is sage, just the culinary sage. Mm-hmm. Sage is actually a focusing agent. It allows you to stay focused on the task. It is a mental stimulant that isn't caffeine type. It keeps you awake and focused and working hard. If you think, you know, sage, one of the other meanings of sage is this wise person, book learned person. They started being called sage because they would drink a lot of sage tea while they were working on this stuff because it helped them stay awake and focused and on task. The third thing in there is ginkgo leaf, an ancient Chinese tree. And what's cool about the ginkgo leaf is that it has been shown to increase the blood flow to the brain, bringing the oxygen and the glucose the brain needs to do all this thinking. I should mention that all this stuff, because I mentioned at the beginning, Master's of Medicinal Chemistry, PhD in Physical Organic Chemistry. I need to see the science about these herbs. So everything is scientifically proven. If you go to the website, there's links to all the papers, scientific papers that I used during the formulation of these. The dosage designed for the average adult of 165 pounds. If you're 50 pounds less, take one less capsule. If you're 50 pounds more or more, take an extra one. But yeah, it's all based on the science of the compounds in these plants.
That sounds like the one I'm going to be purchasing because I'll tell you what, man, I have such a hard time focusing sometimes. Yeah. And I know a lot of it has to do with the nutritions and my diet, mm-hmm. you know, but restoring my brain power is, you know, can be super beneficial, yeah. I think.
One special tip about this is before you take it, you want to do a deep, deep, deep smell of it. It smells really good. But one of the things that does, the most direct connection between your senses and your brain is your nose. It is the most direct thing. And Now in modern life, our main goal with scents is not to smell anything. You know, we're spending more time trying not to smell things, or occasionally maybe smell something good. We've lost using it as a sensory apparatus. If you go work with the Amazon people down there, they rely on their nose as much as their hearing and their eyes and everything else. They're constantly smelling the air and everything like that as a way of figuring out what may be around, what resources are around. But by smelling the brain pill, you are, it's almost like a Pavlovian priming your brain to get ready because something good is coming your way.
Right.
And so I just found the effect is that much stronger.
You like reactivate your nose senses. Yep. I think my nose senses have been turned off. I live with a dog and three cats, man. And the dog got sprayed by a skunk in the spring. And after that fiasco, you know, running through the house, I think my nose power has diminished.
Same with me. I have allergies, but certain times of the year I can actually breathe. And when I do, I go outside and you smell the fresh air. You feel it immediately after that extra oxygen getting in your system. Oh man, very effective.
So along with that, we also have things like the libido pill coming up. Now, this is not like Viagra. It's not a quick fix. It is what I call a slow burn. It has maca root, which really ups the brain's response to affectionate physical attention.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Heck yeah.
My wife hates this one. She's tired of me taking this every day. But it has burdock root. One of the side effects of the burdock, we already talked about the burdock root and the liver pill, but the liver is responsible for getting rid of the lactic acid that your muscles generate when it's doing something strenuous. And so by removing that lactic acid more quickly, it allows you or gives you greater endurance and the ability to keep going stronger for longer. Not a bad thing.
I like that. I changed my mind. That will be my purchase for
today. And it's amazing how many people take this before working out. And then it also has goldenrod in it. So the libido pill, originally when I formulated it, I mainly formulated it for guys because I'm a guy. So the maca root and the burdock is great for men. It also has goldenrod in it. Goldenrod.
What part of the goldenrod?
So it has the flowers. And you're not allergic to goldenrod. Goldenrod is not a wind pollinated plant. It has sticky pollen. It's the ragweed that shows up at the same time as goldenrod, but ragweed.
Okay.
Has,
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
I thought there was like an allergen thing with goldenrod.
No. Nope. It's just people don't know nature. They're blaming goldenrod, which is very showy, for the pollen produced by ragweed, which is not showy at all.
Okay.
Anyway, the goldenrod, it rebuilds tissues designed to hold fluid. Like normally in a lot of things, I would say like varicose veins. Varicose veins is where your capillaries are starting to break down. More blood is leaking out than it's supposed to. It's not coming in, and so you get buildup of blood around the veins. And so goldenrod has a long history of being used for that. But it works with any tissue designed to hold fluid under pressure and allows it to reach higher pressures again. So goldenrod.
I know there's a lot of plants out there in nature. And so far he knows how to eat and process all of the ones we've listed. So you must do a lot of studying.
Oh, Lord. I've been doing this all my life.
That's awesome, man.
I'm 53 years old. Both my parents are in their late 80s. Dad's still out every day hunting, fishing. Like I said, up in Minnesota, he's out there ice fishing today. I know he is because there's more than 4 inches of ice on the lake by his house. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. Lucky.
So they just grew up and they were the role models, being out in nature, being healthy. Mom has fought back 2 different types of cancer and is still kicking. So
I'm sure you were a big help with that.
The cancer, hopefully not.
Well, I mean, with your knowledge of the plant.
Yeah, they got me to the first step. They opened my eyes to what was out there, and then I just ran with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then brought all the science in and so forth. Yeah,
very good.
But yeah, we also have the blood pressure pill, the uric acid pill, the stonebreaker pill, the serenity pill. That one has been very popular, especially in conjunction with the brain pill. So it's for helping build feelings of confidence and I got this sort of thing.
Right.
I can't use the A word because then the FDA will crack down on me.
Right.
But it gives you a feeling of I got this. I can do this sort of thing. It's really cool.
The stone breaker, that's for the kidney stones.
Kidney and gallstones. Yeah.
Now I know a lot of people as of lately have problems with that. Mm-hmm. I know they're not drinking enough water. in their
and not moving enough. Board,
but
yeah,
but I that's definitely one I'll throw their way, the Stonebreaker.
Yep. So it has the Chancapedra, which has been shown to help break down the uric acid, calcium oxalate, and some of the other kidney and gallstone things. It has saw palmetto, which none of the others have. You might hear of saw palmetto used for prostate type issues. What it actually does is it allows the opening of the urethra to enlarge. So it doesn't shrink the prostate. It makes the urethra opening larger so you can get more flow through. Oh. This also makes it easier to pass things with less pain.
Saw palmetto? Is that what?
Yeah, saw palmetto. Yeah, you'll see a lot of the men's prostate health type thing with the saw palmetto in there because it helps you urinate easier.
I see.
And then it has a diuretic in there to help increase the flush. But you want to make sure, like you said, you drink lots of water. And that's the thing. Move and drink water, mainly water, occasionally beer. That goes a long way towards making you healthy.
For sure, man. That's one I really struggle with too, is like water intake, you know.
Yep.
Just drinking enough water. Real quick before we wrap this up for the afternoon, why don't you tell everybody where they can find your amazing products at, where they can find you at.
Okay, excellent. So the center of my existence is medicinemanplantco.com. medicinemanplantco.com. From there, you can see my products. You can see the science behind the products. You can see the ancestral tips. You can see my list of upcoming classes. Like I said, I mainly teach in Texas. I also teach in Georgia and up in Minnesota, and I've gotten requests to go other places. I've done Zoom presentations in Canada and things like that. So, but there's both the walkabouts and Zoom presentations. If you're in the Houston area, I started teaching cooking with wild edible classes for the Houston Botanical Garden.
Are these things that you do online?
No, these are in person. So
in person,
yeah, the cooking classes, they're in person. We're all working together cooking. Those are a lot of fun. They're a lot of work for me, but they're a lot of fun.
Sounds like it would be a lot.
But yeah, Medicine Man Plant Co. And then from there, you can see my social media. I have multiple because I have the Foraging Texas stuff. So if you wanted to see the edible uses of plants, you would follow Foraging Texas on Facebook and Meriwether Forager on Instagram. If you want to see the medicinal stuff, then you would follow Medicine Man Plant Co. on Facebook and MM Plant Co. on Instagram. I've even started doing TikTok. Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, God.
I was up for 2 hours.
Mainly I did it just to annoy my two daughters.
It really is effective. I was up for like an hour and a half, 2 hours last night just watching TikTok videos. Yep,
yeah. They know how to tap the dopamine. That's exactly what they're doing. So
for sure. Mark, you came, you dropped the hammer of the gods on us with wealth of information. It was great.
Yeah, that was fun.
It was fun. It was such an honor to have you on the show, man.
My pleasure. Give a preacher a pulpit and he will preach.
Absolutely.